First, to whether our elite soldiers do or don't act on our behalf in theatres of war. For 4 years now, the Inspector General of the Australian Defence Force has been conducting an inquiry into claims that elite Australian troops killed unarmed Afghan men and children. The inquiry is looking into 55 separate incidents of alleged breaches of the rules of war in Afghanistan between 2005 and 16, the latest just coming this week, that story. Simultaneously, journalists at the ABC and Nine have uncovered a string of disturbing incidents which could qualify as war crimes perpetrated by some in special forces. So what has gone wrong and why do these stories keep emerging? Investigative journalist and author Chris Masters has spent many years reporting on Australia's special forces and their role in Afghanistan. I'm delighted he can join me now from his home. Chris Masters, hello and welcome.
Good morning, Geraldine.
What point is the official inquiry at, Chris? Is there a date when it will hand its final report to the Chief of the Defence Forces, Angus Campbell?
I don't think there's an exact date. We've been expecting it for probably three and a half years. It goes to show that, you know, you don't have an inquiry for 4 years if it's into nothing. And initially, people were claiming that was the case. It was just looking into rumours. I'm confident that is not so. And I think many members of the public have seen evidence for themselves, witnessed the recent Four Corners program where we see an apparently unarmed man representing no threat being shot down in a field. I think that this has been an extremely difficult inquiry, and that's the best explanation for why it's taken so long. Maybe it will be reporting in the next month, so I'm not sure.
And the man who is conducting the report, Justice Brereton, is himself a reservist, isn't he? He's a major general in the reserves.
Yes, he's a distinguished appeals court judge as well as a major general in the reserves.
Are these isolated cases? I know you're not going to go into the specifics, and you yourself, of course, are being sued by Ben Robert Smith, a VC winner at the moment, so we'll be careful of the legalities. But are these isolated cases, or are they indicative of a wider culture, would you say, in special forces?
I think it's true that it's isolated, but it's also true that there are systemic elements to this. I thought in the beginning that it was just likely to be rogue players. Don't forget that this has been called out by the operators themselves. I mean, we wouldn't know about this, but for the fact that many of them have said, no, come on, you know, Australian soldiers don't do that sort of stuff. But the buck's got to stop somewhere. You've got to think, well, as the Special Operations Commander, Adam Finlay, was recently quoted saying to his men in Perth, this was a failure of moral leadership. Well, something went wrong, I think at the very top, the strategic purpose of Afghanistan, the importance of the maintenance of human rights and the preservation of a proud Australian record, somehow some vigilance was lost in that regard. It was an extraordinarily difficult conflict. It dragged on for so long, you know, 12 years. It became dehumanising, and I was there myself, you know, in 2011. At that point, people were saying, it shouldn't be a surprise that it's going so wrong, because I think the metric for success became a rather abstract one. You know, we'll just make this country a safer place for its inhabitants and then get out of here with as much dignity as we can. And for some of the operators on the ground, and I think the special forces people are different too. You know, don't forget that we had conventional forces over there for a long time engaged in the same difficult struggle, and war crimes allegations don't attach themselves to them. I think the nature of special forces being so secretive and somewhat of a law unto themselves meant that many of them perhaps fell into a trap of seeing that the best metric for success was simply killing other people, and that, it seems to me, meant killing some of the people that we were there to protect.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about them then, these elite units, the special forces. Who makes up the special forces? How are they chosen?
The special forces are special, and they're very impressive. The main kinetic elements are SAS from Perth. People have heard of the SAS. The commandos are also a big fighting unit based on the east coast.
They're, the commandos. That's a separate.
The commandos. Yes, mm-hmm. The second commando regiment is based at Holsworthy, and the first commando regiment, which is a reservist regiment, has units in Sydney and Melbourne. Then you have an engineering regiment as well. And behind that, you have logistics support and aviation support, etc.
And what's the chain of command? I mean, who do they answer to? Who determines their missions?
Well, they're supposed to be part of the Australian Defence Force. And this perhaps is where some of the things went wrong, as I've come to reflect. They do have autonomy. They do operate separate to the conventional chain of command, and that's generally seen as a good thing. It makes them swift, efficient. It makes them self-contained. But in Afghanistan, they had very little to do with conventional forces. I know when I was there, and I'm the only reporter to have actually worked within the Special Forces compound, many conventional forces weren't allowed in there at all. I remember a commanding officer telling me that he didn't have the code to the gate. He couldn't go to places that I was going. They do... There's a trap that they can fall into of plain and simple hubris, that they think they're so good and so special that they don't have to take notice of the conventional chain of command. There's a bit of a feeling that the foreign elements, but most particularly the Americans, became quite influential. They worked with the Americans. They wanted the approval of the Americans. And some people would say that towards the end of the conflict, they were taking more notice of the Americans than they were of their own chain of command.
And what was the difference with the Americans? I mean, how would that have subtly affected, might that have affected the culture?
Well, I think all of them become captured by this kill culture. And in Special Forces, the really sexy operators are the SEAL Team 6 type, kill squads. And I think perhaps many of them identified with that personality subset in Special Forces, whereas there's a wide subset. I mean, initially, our Special Forces, and SASR in particular, were seen as the sort of the ghosts of the battlefield, who are never seen but extremely influential. As they would often say, the shot that's not fired is more important than the one that is. Mm. And Geraldine, I really should say, I mean, I've been critical, obviously, and I don't want to give the sense that they were all like that. I mean, of course they weren't. The great majority weren't, and some of the best among them. This is a terrible story for Australia. But if there's a good side to it, it's that, yes, plenty of them that were in there could see bad things going on and called it out. And indeed, the ADF has done the same. They've stuck with this difficult inquiry.
Mm. Yes, you've been writing. Also, you did write, along with Nick McKenzie, about the role of the British Special Forces. This is another one that was subtly, I think you suggest, could have had an impact on the sensibility, shall we say, of some of these people, because they had been really hardened in Northern Ireland too, hadn't they?
That's right. I mean, look, Australians are pretty good at doing the wrong thing too. We can't sort of shift the blame, but there is a theory that this blooding culture, if you look at what went wrong, it's probably in three major categories. One is just plain and simple summary executions. Two is sort of disguising the evidence on the battlefield, dropping throwdowns to pretend that a civilian who might have been killed was actually a combatant. And another was blooding, the notion that they blooded younger soldiers to get them used to the idea of killing, which of course is a core business. It's what many of them are meant to do. And there's a theory that some of that was imported from foreign forces.
Well, in fact, that goes to an important thing about investigations, because there were people put in to investigate from time to time, weren't they? But they seem to have been given short shrift. And certainly their results don't conform with what we're now seeing.
I know. I think that's come as a surprise to a lot of people, and even some of the commanders that were on the ground. I mean, I think many of them were doing a good job and believed they were doing a good job. And then when they see this stuff on television, it comes as a hell of a shock to them as well. So, somebody had their eye off the ball. And it was extremely difficult for the investigators who were sent in.
Would they have been regular army, or would they have been from within?
They weren't special forces. No. And that makes a big difference, I think. They tend to respect and talk to one another. They often weren't allowed to go to the scenes of the crime, so to speak, because it was just too dangerous. And these SF people are extremely good at covering their tracks. I mean, their business is being secret. And this is another reason why this inquiry has gone on for so long. I mean, so many of these people are not just secretive, but they're trained in resisting interrogation. So I think when those investigators came in and started asking questions, it was pretty easy for the wool to be pulled over certain people's eyes.
Chris Masters is my guest, and one text has just come in and along this line. Many Army senior officers were serving in national command and operational positions in the Middle East when these incidents occurred. What did they know? What did they ask? Not just soldiers committing crimes here, but questions need to be asked of still serving senior officials. Chris Masters ought to know this. How do you respond to that?
Yes, well, I did say that the buck stops somewhere, and I don't think command is in any way off the hook. The Inspector General will report, and as I said, also the current Special Operations Commander has talked about a failure of moral leadership. I mean, historically, I think it's perhaps another tough reason for the diggers themselves. They often feel the officers get away with this stuff, you know, that the blame sort of ends up falling on them. I really don't think that will be the case in this. I'm sure that the ADF and the Inspector General is looking hard at what went wrong within the chain of command.
I know that there are some thoughts in parts of the broader military that if this report is serious enough, that there might have to be dramatic thoughts taken about disbanding it and starting up again, building a culture from the ground up, as is happening in some of the police forces, for instance, in the US. That is now occurring. When you've got a culture that, even if it is a small subset of the culture, which is sort of so changed that you can't work with it, and you've got to scuttle it and begin again, which is an incredibly big thing, I'm suggesting. I know now, it'd be a huge decision. But is there any? Have you heard any talk like that?
You do hear that talk. I mean, the very role of special forces evolves so much that that there'd be arguments for adjustments anyway. Most of what occurred a long time ago. If there are perpetrators, the great majority of them aren't now serving. There is a strong example from Canada of their elite paratrooper people being disbanded after an atrocity in, I think it was 1993, in Somalia, where a kid was beaten to death, and so that's exactly what they did, Geraldine. They tore up the whole game and started again. I doubt that that will be the case for some of the reasons that I outlined already. SASR in Perth in particular is a very proud regiment and a very valuable regiment. But of course, lots of things need to be fixed, and we've got an eye on different issues these days to those that occurred when we went into Afghanistan in 2001. And I think there'd be a strong sense that those skill sets are still important, but have to be managed. You have to keep the attack dog on the leash.
Yes, I think in your writing you've suggested that, and clearly what you've gleaned is there is a belief that there's 10 or 12 officers who are probably at the core of this, as it were. So I suppose that's still a, it's not a small number, but it's not. And obviously there were, as you say, people from within those units who, by the sound of you, the people who have taken that footage and made it available to the media, they're quite remarkable in their own way too.
I think so too. They get medals for physical courage, but moral courage is often far more impressive. And I think it's been extremely difficult for those operators who've called out other operators. There's a damn good chance that they'll never be thanked for it. But as a nation, I think it's important that we do thank them, because standards are important. A lot of people will say, well, why care about this? You know, what goes on the battlefield can stay there. War is an ugly, messy business. But as best I understand, we've never been talking about heat of battle, spur of the moment misjudgments. We've been talking about much worse than that, and we've got every right to be proud of the Australian soldier, and we don't want them to behave to standards that aren't ours. We don't want them behaving like Nazis.
Has this damaged our reputation internationally in this field?
Well, yes and no. I mean, of course, it's uncomfortable reading. But on the other hand, it has been called out. I mean, a lot of countries would be tempted by the cover-up. We've seen other scandals, similar scandals, by the way, in the UK and the US. And it did seem to me that the UK just didn't want to go there. And in the United States, Donald Trump has actually exonerated a couple of people who were charged with war crimes. I'd like to think Australia will be better than that.
It was a nasty war, and it is true. So there might be people listening who are saying, really, people sitting in listening to their radios have got no idea what we had to go through. And for instance, there was quite a lot of attention paid to this issue of Afghan spotters. So not your regular fighters, but people who called fighters in, for want of a better term, who sent out messages, who often were unarmed, as I understand it. And that's been one of the answers. Now, do you have any sympathy with that?
I absolutely do, and I saw it for myself. That split-second decision that you make on the battlefield as to whether this person's a combatant or not, you know, you saw, there were situations where a farmer would pick up a rifle and become an insurgent and then put the rifle down and pick up a hoe and work in the middle of the field. And people watched this, you know. They watched children being appropriated onto the battlefield, carrying weapons, et cetera, et cetera. And soldiers would sit and watch a child race across and pick up a weapon and bring that back to someone else. As far as the spotters were concerned, it was a difficult call. I mean, if they weren't a combatant, but they were able to call in a strike on an approaching helicopter via a radio, you know, they clearly represented a serious threat. So, and from the comfort of our lounge chairs, that is a difficult thing to understand. And I think we need to be forgiving to a degree too. But again, I say, these inquiries aren't about matters like that.
No, but John Hewson, for instance, has in the past posed the question, how much can we expect from the inquiry? It is a case of the ADF inspecting itself, isn't it?
It is. And you might see that there would always be problems there. And the Special Forces people have a history and habit of covering things up and making sure that only the good stories get out. So there are concerns in that regard. But, I mean, I don't have them. I'm watching over the fence, the Inspector General inquiry at work. It seems to me that they seem to be determined to get to the bottom of this.
Any response, by the way, from Afghanistan? Final question to you about these revelations. I mean, has the Afghan government had anything to say?
I don't know, and I don't think so. The people have, of course. A lot of people have been over there interviewing witnesses, etc. I think some of the operators who might have done the bad thing 10 or 12 years ago never imagined that people would be going back and asking questions in these places. But I could see circumstances where it was no wonder they ended up hating us. And, Geraldine, this is an important point. I mean, it was obviously morally wrong to be killing unarmed civilians, but it was strategically terribly wrong as well, because we were just ruining our own difficult efforts.
Chris Masters, very good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Geraldine.
Chris Masters, the author of several books, including No Front Line, Australian Special Forces at War in Afghanistan, and I can see several texts have come through too, and if I have the time, I shall read some of them.